to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
If you've been listening to this program for a while, you know that Cheryl and I love to discover Christian women with fascinating stories. And we are on part two today with Pam Wing with a story that is just going to get better and better.
We're actually at the discovery point with Pam, yes, because the first one, I wanted our listeners to have a little bit of background to know how astounding her discovery of finding these Christian relatives and her Christian heritage was. So if you've listened to part one, you know she was born in a irreligious family in Berkeley, of all places. Her father had been a professor at Berkeley. That kind of deepens the atheism in the home a little bit. And through a series of tragedies, Pam began to search for God. And when she cried out to him, he met her even before she knew his name.
And this was at San Francisco State.
It was.
Which I have a little fun fact. In 73, I went there to visit a friend of mine just overnight for one night. And everything you were saying about dorm life, I experienced it as a very naive high school student. And actually, I flew up there, and it was my very first plane ride ever from Southern California to San Francisco, and then taken to San Francisco State University, The dorms. And I realized there's a whole other world out there. So everything you're saying about how you called out to God in that place of the darkness or the emptiness.
Yes.
There was no purpose. And that's why you're saying what happens when you die? There's just nothing. But God met you in such a beautiful way.
There's a book called Night of the Witch. It's not a Christian book, but it just has to do with the history, the evil, wicked history of San Francisco.
Mm.
And the part that it really doubles down on is the time that we're talking about in the 70s.
Yep.
And just the darkness, as you said before, you know, first time the Patty Hearst, the Jim Jones, the Harvey Milk.
That whole thing. I can tell you where I was when I heard of the assassination.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it was just crazy. And the mayor and all of that. So now we've got you saved. We got you saved in part one,
right,
which is great.
Well, I think Jesus did that.
Yes. Absolutely true. But we talked about that. And then Lou is showing up at all your concerts that you do as a harpist and a flute. And Lou also is a Christian, and he also had a born-again experience, as you did. And now he's part of the was he part of the worship at that time of the church?
No, but where we left off was,
yes,
I went to the U.S. Center for World Peace.
That's right.
Okay. And and so I went to the U.S. Center for World Missions, and there it was in the Pasadena campus of the old Nazarene Church. And now these dorms were quite different now.
Okay?
And what people were doing in the dorms was quite different.
Viva la difference.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't share about one thing about the dorms. Part of when I went running into the arms of Jesus is in the dorms at San Francisco State, a gal was murdered.
Oh, my God. Goodness.
From the floor above me.
Mm. Oh.
And so that's part of the chaos that was that fall of 77. And I was really looking for God.
Yes.
So now we're a few years later. I went to the U.S. Center for World Missions. I learned about missions. This was a school for people to go to right before they went on the field.
Right.
It was a preparation. They might go for 3 months. This was a 30-day thing. God paid for it all. I can remember sitting with Mom. She goes, "Well, what do you need?" And I said, "It's all paid for." Mm-hmm. The youth group had taken an offering.
Wow.
I was
love it.
Totally paid for.
Wow.
And so God was showing things to my mom. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And she was still worried that this was a cult. But now I'm going to the U.S. Center for World Missions. We studied language, the Bible, culture, and one other thing. And we're putting this little cohort of all of us who are doing this 30-day program. And brand new person I've never met, Carrie. And we became fast friends. And as we're sharing our testimony, they said, and what do you do? And I said, well, I've been a harp major and da da da. Oh, ooh, you have to play the harp. Well, I had actually zipped up the harp and was not going to play the harp until I figured out what God wanted to do with my life. And they said, no, we have to, you have to play the harp. I said, well, I don't know anybody. I don't know anything about finding a harp, but if you can find a harp, I'll take it as God's message. Dun, da, da, da. God provides a harp. My roommate, Carrie, goes to a church where they have a harpist. Anyway, so I, to make a long story short, I end up back at, ready to go back to San Francisco, ready, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm no longer a music major, which is another part of the story, because my teacher got let go. And I don't know what I'm doing with my life, except I now know how to fast and pray. And I come back, and the church had started giving Lu Wing 1 month, one Sunday a month, excuse me, he did contemporary worship with a guitar instead of an organ. Dun, 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 dun. Right? And so the pastor says, you know what? Why don't you do worship with Lou one of these Sundays? So we put it together. And so I brought my harp to the church. In case you don't know, bringing a harp somewhere requires quite a lot.
We can imagine.
Right? Yes. And this was a fairly small harp, but it still had my station wagon and all that stuff. And then you have to haul it up the stairs for us to practice. And I did not realize that I kind of did know how to play guitar, because my twin sister and I used to sing every Beatles song and every John Denver song you ever heard or anything. And so Lou starts showing me. He has read music, but he's not. He's just playing the chords. And he goes, you can do this. You can do this. And I said, well, what's that? That's a D. That's a G. That's an A. And I go, okay, well, I can do that on the harp. Before I knew it, I could just play along with him. And I can remember this was a 2 hour, it was supposed to be a 1 hour rehearsal. It was 2 or 3 hours. And I'm like, what was that? Right? And so in the meantime, he asked for prayer because he was thinking about going up to a place called Calvary Chapel Chico to help be a worship leader up there. And I'm like, oh, darn. So praying, giving it back to the Lord, praying, giving it back to the Lord. Eventually, we went on a date right before he left, and then we went, oh, my, and then he left. Mm. So our dating was distant, and going back and forth between Chico and San Francisco until finally we decided to get married, and because it became obvious, and the Lord had led us through this, and but we decided we wanted to leave San Francisco, and we decided to go to San Diego to be involved with a church with an international focus because we both had missions on our mind. We were like, I want to go to China. Yes, we could go to China. We could go anywhere. We can do anything. We were so full of faith, and we were going to be worship leaders for Jesus, right? And so we end up in San Diego. Calvary Chapel San Diego had just become Horizon Christian Fellowship. And they said, well, this is your first year of marriage. We don't want you to do much, but because you should get used to getting married. This is a good thing to do. And we ended up in an apartment just blocks from the church. And so they said, well, that first night we were there, we went to this Bible study with this guy named John Wickham, and it was a musician's study. And it was so sweet. We didn't have electricity yet or anything. And John just prayed for us. And then he said, well, gosh, guys, when you guys get settled, let's have you do worship. So we do worship one Monday night. And people are opening the door. It was like adult ed night, you know, school of evangelism at night is what it was. And people are like opening up the door and looking at the harp. The harp kind of is showy. Somebody once told me, the harp is the diva itself. That yes. is the diva.
Makes sense.
So yeah. Everybody's looking. Yeah. And we play our worship thing, and God blessed it. And a couple days later, John says, I can't hide you anymore. I need you on Sunday. It turns out Mike Mack and John Wickham had been praying for 7.5 years for a harpist.
Whoa.
To come be part of a worship Whoa. Team. Wouldn't it be cool if we had a harpist? Wouldn't it be cool?
Wow. And they are very few and far between.
Yeah, right. That's an unusual request.
It really is.
It is. And I had been to different things and everybody was like, you want to play the harp? What about guitar? Right? If you could go on the mission field on the guitar or with a piano, but how are you going to go on the mission field with a harp?
Lots of baggage.
Yeah, lots. And how are we going to get it there and all this other stuff? So I go to play. These are the days of truly walking on water worship where we ran through every song once. There's no chord charts. There's no words. We just did this. This is 1982. And it actually turned out that the bass player told me the names of the chords and what key we were in. Good old Terry.
Yeah.
He was feeding me the chords. And before long, Lou is doing worship with John because he could play a guitar well enough to play with John Wickham, which if you know John Wickham, that's saying something.
Huge.
So we just, all of a sudden, we're in ministry. Ministry was happening so fast then that all of the best laid plans were like, we're doing home fellowship, we're doing ministry, we're just doing everything. And
Okay, so
now where?
Let's Lou finishes his education, but when? Because you told me you ran into some relatives.
Okay. So, long story short, we follow the Lord everywhere. We go to Scotland for 3 years. We have three children. We come back, and Lou tells the story of being at a pastor's conference. Lou was, at one point, decided he really wanted to be more of a teacher of science and get ordained. So he got ordained, and then he's at a pastor's conference at, I think it was Murrieta, and Brian walks up to him. Now, my husband has a PhD in protein biochemistry now that he'd gotten from Scotland, and Brian walks up and goes, hey, you want to look at the Bible College? And so they walked over and they looked at what the construction was, and Brian said, well,
Brian is my husband, just Brian, you want to say.
Yes. Brian Broderson, right?
Yes.
And so Brian says, well, do you want to teach here? He goes, yeah. He goes, well, we'll put you in a substitute and we'll see what goes on. So Lou starts traveling to the Bible College and teaching different things. And eventually in December of 2005, we move up there and go on staff.
And I have to just say, Lou was like everybody's favorite teacher.
Right.
He just was. He just steals Wonderful. The show, and he's hilarious. He even did his favorite book is the book of Leviticus, and he makes Leviticus interesting.
Right.
And I won't tell you how, but he does offer sacrifices.
Yes. He really goes in because he's teaching human anatomy on the side. So then he goes, well, what's the liver and the kidney and the fatty lobe, right? And so he brings in a cat, and the class goes berserk. But anyway, and he teaches a lot of the Old Testament. He loves.
But he shows you how, with the sacrifices, he shows you the significance from the anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. It's stunning. It's revelational. But so you're there at Murrieta now.
Okay. So then my mother says, you know, you have a cousin. You've heard this story of your Aunt Ruth or your great Aunt Ruth. This was my Grandma Sue's oldest sister. Now, this was part of why they didn't want to be Christians, because Aunt Ruth, she went to be a missionary in Abba of the Congo, the city of Congo, and she will go into that whole thing. But so there is, I'm going to hold this. Anyway, so my mom says, well, you know, I've always wanted to meet her son who lives in Yorba Linda.
Okay, now wait, did you actually hear about Ruth as you were growing up, or is your mother just sort of acting like, of course you know about Ruth?
She actually, my middle name was Ruth.
Oh.
And I heard about this Aunt Ruth, and she had died in Africa.
Yeah.
And this is part of why you shouldn't become a Christian.
Mm. Okay.
Something tragic might happen to you like that.
But Ruth,
oh, serving
had
the Lord.
Relative in.
So Ruth had one son
Africa. Okay.
And he was now living in Yorba Linda. And I didn't have any of this connected up, but I had met Lawrence and his wife Kitty and their daughter Tyler once when I was probably 4 or 5.
Now Lawrence is Ruth's son.
Lawrence is Ruth's son, mm-hmm. and he is living in Yorba Linda.
Okay.
So my mom says we should do something with this. And so I start reaching out. All she's got is a phone number. Turns out he's lived in Yorba Linda forever and a day, and the numbers and the addresses are all right.
Wow.
And so I think we go to him once from Murrieta over to Yorba Linda. My mom came down to visit, and we meet him for the first time. And I hear the story of his mother, Ruth.
Wow.
Ruth Boot Laird. And should I go into that?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Dive in.
Okay. Ruth was born in 1886, and she was born. I love the way it's written. I have to tell you, I know this story because of letters that were saved almost 100 years ago.
What a gift that is. And for those of you saving letters, keep on doing it, the important ones.
And
you know what? We're actually sitting here looking at a binder that Pam has with the actual letters in protective sheets and that beautiful handwriting from that era.
Mm-hmm.
But what a treasure to find out what Ruth's life was like in Africa and the Congo.
Right. And so her story, she was born, I love it, because I get this information from the application to work with C.T. Studd's missions work called Heart of Africa.
Mm-hmm. So she goes to work with Heart of Africa.
Heart of Africa.
Wow. Mm. So C.T. Studd, who is well known to our listeners, we did a podcast on his daughter.
Oh.
Jasmine did way back at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the application, she describes herself that she was born into a large family of earnest, active Christians.
I love that.
Mm. And I love earnest. Isn't that our authentic word now?
Yes.
But earnest, I'm going to use that more.
And active. I like that too.
Earnest, active. Their father took them to church all the time. She started school. But she left because she's one of 7 children. She's probably the oldest girl. And she stays home. And she leaves school, helps at home. The second to the youngest is my grandma Sue. And then there's one more. I think her name is Edith, is the next one. And those are the two people who I think save all this information. Right? So they have it. No, it's Ethel, not Edith. It's Ethel. And so all these letters come from them. And somehow this was saved by Lawrence. And I've got digital copies of everything. So it was all sent to me by what would be Lawrence's daughter, who I eventually meet. So we meet. I get to know some of the stuff. It's really different, but he's a genuine Christian. He and his wife, Kitty, have been involved with Gideon Bibles their whole
really?
Life.
Oh.
They've just done the mission field. And I find out, I talk to him, I still was cautious with my mom when I talked about being a Christian because she had laid down the law. We didn't talk about this. Don't pray at my house. It was pretty difficult. So I begin to get to know him, and he says, well, you know, your grandma was a Christian. And I went, oh. But I think she had been silenced by the culture also. So she was the silent Christian who didn't tell me anything. So I saw him three or four times before he passed away, and every time was absolutely a treasure. And one time he came to the Bible, to Murrieta, to do a seniors retreat that Chuck Smith happened to be speaking at, right? And so we met out there by the clock tower and talked about everything, and we just couldn't believe the sweetness of his life. And that is when I learned that they had been praying for me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Since I was born. And when I was going through all those surgeries.
Wow.
So I just...
And that little twinkle in Grandma Sue's eye.
Yeah, exactly.
And Lawrence, who you haven't even, had not even met yet or knew about, and
right.
They're praying.
They're,
and then there you are, Murrieta. What overlapping circles with your life too, Cheryl, that
I
your
know.
Dad was there
I know.
And they're talking
I know.
About.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, Lou, everybody loves Lou, you know. But Pam is this one with this heritage, which is just, it's like everybody kind of knew me because I was Chuck Smith's daughter. But Brian has a whole different heritage that is, again, he found out later that he discovered a spiritual heritage, which is astounding, that goes back to England. But so we've got you talking at the clock tower with Lawrence, finding out that you were prayed for the entire time. When did you start researching Ruth, your aunt, your great aunt Ruth?
I remember that my mother had given me copies of this. My mom was always interested in what we were interested, anyone of us were interested in. So she had sent me these things, and I had a file of them.
Mm.
And my grandma Sue also had a dear friend who was a missionary in Peking before World War II, and I have a whole collection of her things too.
Oh my goodness!
So, and I remember meeting her once. So, and that was way before I became Christian. But there, these were very sweet people, you know. And my grandma was just wonderful. So. It was probably 5 or 6 years ago that I was given this box of all these things. After Lawrence and his wife, Kitty, had passed away, and their daughter, she had so much stuff, she didn't know what to do. And I told them that I wanted to look into this, and she just sent me all this stuff. And I have a wonderful scrapbook that is the scrapbook that Ruth's story. She says she was converted when she was 12, and then at 25, she went back and got her high school degree and a teaching certificate. She taught for 2.5 years, and then she went to the Denver Bible Institute, and that's where she met Guy Laird, who had been he's a civil engineer and an electrical engineer. He was so famous, he even almost worked for Thomas Edison, but he just wanted to support missions into Africa. And so if you read C.T. Studd's story or the story of his daughter, there's a time when she comes to America.
Right.
And she starts sharing the story. These people, this group of eight, travel from Denver all the way to Abba, and they are the American contingent that responded to the story of what C.T. Studd was doing in the heart of Africa.
That's remarkable.
You know, what's really interesting about that, if there's a story called The Cambridge Seven, and it has to do when C.T. Studd, John Pollock wrote it, got saved. And C.T. Studd and S.P. Smith went all over England, and they were I want to say proselytizing people into the mission field, calling people into the mission field. And they also went up to St. Andrew's College, which I think is interesting because that's where her husband went. But the response was just incredible to this call to missions. In fact, that's, you know, that's one of my favorite stories is when C.T. Studd and F.B. Meyer, all these people with just initials for first names.
That's right.
When they meet. And that is so exciting. It looks like we're going to have to go into a part three, which I knew we were going to.
But first, give us a year, Pam. What year did Ruth go to the Congo?
Okay, so she went to the, it was in 1920.
Okay.
Is when
the letters.
That's enough
just to kind of place the time frame.
October 1920.
Oh, there you go.
To be continued.
Yes. And that will be so good. So we've done the discovery. When we come back, we are going to talk about Ruth Laird. and all that God did in the Congo. Join us for part three.
Can't wait.
For listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at wwk@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.